What happens during a white-collar criminal investigation and prosecution? We're going to spend the next few episodes talking about this. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Gene Tausk. And once again, I'd like to welcome everyone to my White Collar Crime and Fraud podcast. Although it's towards the end of April, I am confident I'll be able to get out another episode next week. So, yes, actually, I will fulfill my goal of getting out two episodes in 1 month. And today is April 21st, 2024. The next couple of podcasts, we're going to talk about the anatomy of a white collar crime investigation and ultimate prosecution. I think it's important for a number of reasons. First of all, I'm an attorney. I do a lot of white-collar crime defense, so obviously it's a subject I'm very interested in. And second, there's a lot of questions about how does a white-collar investigation or any criminal investigation really happen. Of course, in America, we're used to no end of series on television shows about cops and investigations and prosecutions, etc., etc. I don't need to tell you, of course, that what's on TV is mostly not real. Or if it is real, there's only so much you can do in an hour time frame or even a miniseries. So, for example, there was, in my opinion anyway, one of the best miniseries ever to hit American television was The People vs. O.J. Simpson, an FX series a few years ago. And although it's not quite, well, not white-collar crime, and obviously the subject matter was the prosecution of O.J. Simpson, who, of course, died this week. I thought it was very, very well done in terms of how a prosecution and defense is actually works, how the prosecution works and how the defense works. Although, I'll just repeat myself here, it wasn't a white-collar crime, obviously. But even over a space of 10 episodes, 10 one-hour episodes, there's a lot that they couldn't get in, the producers couldn't get in. So even in the best of circumstances, there's going to be some questions about just what is, how does a white-collar crime investigation work, or any criminal investigation. So let's talk about it. So part one, we're going to talk about the investigation and how somebody might figure out they're being investigated. With white-collar crime, it's usually the federal authorities that are investigating them, although not always. I mean, certainly here in Harris County, Texas, we have a very active white-collar crime unit with the Harris County District Attorney's Office. So it doesn't have to be the feds that are prosecuting a crime. But normally, in any kind of white-collar crime white-collar crime prosecution, it starts off with an investigation. Remember, and I'm going to repeat myself again, as I always do, a white-collar crime, a fraud, is using deceit to take money from somebody else. It's not like a robbery. If there's a robbery, of course, the cops are called out. If the robber is there and they're caught, well, the robber is prosecuted. It's very one-stop shopping, you might say. You have the robber or the burglar in committing the act. White-collar crime is, of course, different in that because the criminal is using deceit to take money away from their victim, there's several steps involved. And usually, we've discussed this, of course, on the podcast. This involves gaining the trust of the victim. And what usually happens when a person discovers they're under investigation for white-collar crime is one of a couple things. First of all, if they're working for a company, they may be fired by that company. And if, by the way, obviously as a criminal defense attorney, I'm going to be relating these podcasts from the defense point of view. But I think everybody will hopefully appreciate this. So if you're working for a company, and of course, if it's a white-collar crime, it's usually The person committing the fraud is usually in a position of trust, such as an accountant or CEO or something of that nature. And then suddenly you're fired from the company. And the reason being there's an investigation. You're told there's an investigation going on. Well, that's a pretty big clue that you're under investigation. And a second variant of this is when the police or the FBI or some other federal authority or some other state authority comes knocking at your door and has a few questions for you. Now I'm going to stop right here and I'm going to put in my attorney mode, put on my attorney hat. If this ever happens, if you're ever being investigated by a police authority or a federal policing agency, or for that matter, really anyone, you have the right to remain silent and use it, okay? Immediately get counsel. Immediately get counsel. I cannot stress this enough. If you are reasonably certain that you're under investigation for some kind of criminal act, and since this is White Collar Podcast, we're talking about white collar crime, stop everything and get an attorney, especially one who knows about white collar crime. Now, you might be thinking, oh, I'm just trying to drum up business for myself. Well, of course I am. But at the same time, look, I always give the following analogy to clients who come to see me during various stages of an investigation. And it's a medical analogy. If you go to see an attorney when you are during the beginning stages of an investigation against you for white-collar crime, you might say that you are, to use a medical terminology, this is like going to see a doctor when you're having chest pains. If you go to see a doctor when you start having chest pains, well, then the doctor has certain things, of course, they can do. They can, of course, do scans of your heart to see what's going on. If they find something, a lot of times there's non-invasive treatment they can use, and sometimes it's just as simple as changing your diet and getting more exercise. So the time to see an attorney is when you know or should know you're being investigated. If you come to see an attorney after you've been arrested, well, at that point, it's just like having a full-blown heart attack. The only thing the doctor can do is put you on the operating table and start operating. And many times in a white-collar criminal scenario, the person has knowledge or should have had knowledge that they were under investigation, but they didn't do anything about it. Or, God forbid, even worse, they spoke to the police without an attorney present. So I cannot stress this enough. If you or somebody you know is under investigation for a white-collar crime or any kind of crime, do not talk to the police. Get legal help immediately, and that's the best thing you can possibly do. Now, of course, this is no guarantee that prosecution will not result. This is no guarantee that a guilty conviction may not result. However, the options that are available to a good and experienced white-collar criminal defense attorney are much more available when they're retained at the beginning stage of the investigation and not at the end when the arrest has already happened. So with that in mind, please keep that in mind. And as a friend of mine would say, he's a very good criminal defense attorney, I always say, you have the right to remain silent, use it. And I apologize for the profanity, but my friend simply says, shut the fuck up. STFU. And I can't put it better than that. So, how do you know you're being investigated? Well, as I said, there's certain, and we don't, I'm speaking here as an American citizen, of course. If you're on an investigation, you may not know about it. But generally, at some point, the police or a law enforcement agency or even a private agency is going to want to talk to you. Here's a good example. As I mentioned before, in addition to being an attorney, I'm a certified fraud examiner. And many times, certified fraud examiners are retained by private companies to do interviews where at a company where they believe fraud is occurring. And if this occurs, if you're asked to give a statement for something in a company to a certified fraud examiner or any other kind of investigator, you might be under investigation. Now, let's stop here for a minute. This is predicated, of course, on the idea that if you're committing crime, a white-collar crime, well, generally you know about it. Accountants keeping double sets of books, embezzlement, that sort of thing. You know that if it's happening, it's happening. And sooner or later, you might get caught. So, but even if you're being investigated for something you didn't think you did, once again, the signs at some point are that you will have an interview or you will be asked to be interviewed by an investigator at the company or by a police agency. And if that occurs, well, it's time to lawyer up, as they say. So the investigation phase. The investigation phase is where the the authorities, and let's just stick with the topic that this is a white-collar criminal prosecution, the authorities have reason to believe that there's a crime occurring and they need to interview people to talk about the crime. Now, keep in mind as well, one of the workhorses of the federal prosecution system is the conspiracy charge. That is to say, a person may not be the grand master or the leader behind a white-collar criminal act, excuse me, but may be caught up in it anyway. And the feds can easily label a conspiracy charge against that person. To be part of a conspiracy, all you have to do is, a conspiracy is when two or more people get together and have a meeting of the minds where they're going to advance a criminal act. Now, that sounds very straightforward, and for the feds, it usually is. So let's say, and this is the example I give where, and as a matter of fact, I just had a client this week I had to explain this to. If the feds want to charge you with a conspiracy, all they have to do is show that you were part of this conspiracy and that you advanced this conspiracy, even if you didn't really realize you were advancing the conspiracy. Here's a perfect example. Let's say a friend comes up to you and says, "Hey, I want to rob a bank. Can you drive me to the bank so I can rob it?" You get in the car, you drive the person to the bank, and the bank is robbed. Well, obviously, at that point, the person knew or should have known they're part of a conspiracy. They had an idea they were part of a conspiracy. It's what we call the reasonable person standard. If a friend comes up to me and says, "Hey, I need a ride to the bank." Why? Because I want to rob it. Okay, let's go to the bank. Well, you know, it's pretty straightforward at that point that you're committing a crime. You're part of that conspiracy. You may not be the one robbing the bank, but you certainly are advancing the cause of robbing the bank by driving the person there and driving them back. So that's a very straightforward example of being part of a conspiracy to rob a bank. Now, the second example, it's a little bit down the road where I say, okay, your friend comes up to you and says, "Hey, I need to go to the bank. Can you take me to the bank, drive me to the bank and drive me away?" "Yeah, sure." Now, notice the person committing the robbery does not say he's going to commit the robbery, but he gets to the bank, he puts on a mask, takes out a gun, and comes back with the proverbial sack of money, and you drive away. Well, you're still part of that conspiracy. You may not have known at the time that your friend was going to rob the bank, but certainly you were put on notice when your friend put on the mask, took out a gun, went into the bank, and then came out with money. At that point, you were put on notice that you're part of the conspiracy. Well, let's go one step down the line again. Friend comes up to you and says, "Hey, can you drive me to the bank?" "Yeah, sure." So you drive to the bank and your friend goes in and comes out. And nothing really unusual seems to be there. There's no alarm going off. Your friend didn't display a gun to you. Your friend didn't display a mask that he put on or anything like that. So the question then becomes, are you part of that conspiracy? Well, let's say later on in that you watch, well, I'm dating myself, watch the news. Anyway, you hear that a bank robbery occurred at that bank location at the exact time you were there with your friend. Yes, you're still part of that conspiracy. The feds have a very strong argument that you furthered the conspiracy. So what I'm trying to point out here is that you may not know you're part of a conspiracy to be involved in a criminal act, but it's some point along the line, if a reasonable person would suspect that you are part of a conspiracy, well, then you probably are in trouble. You probably are part of that conspiracy. The only way to get out of that conspiracy is to remove yourself from the conspiracy. So, for example, going back to the bank robbery again, let's say your friend doesn't tell you he's going to rob the bank, but he gets to the bank, pulls out the mask, and pulls out the gun. At that point, of course, you're on notice that your friend is up to no good. If you drive away at that, if you say, "I don't want anything to do with you," get out of the car, you drive away. Well, there's an argument that you're not part of the conspiracy because you drove away. Now, you may be at least chargeable with a type of crime where you should have gone to the police afterwards, but there's a very powerful argument to be made that you found out about the conspiracy and you divorced yourself from the conspiracy. So that, of course, is how you get away from a charge of being part of a conspiracy. So, once again, going back to our theme here, you may find out that you're caught up in a conspiracy, a charge of a conspiracy, or you may find out that you're maybe accused of being part of a conspiracy of white-collar crime because you're being investigated either by private authorities at a business you may work at, or you're being investigated by the feds or the cops who come to your door and say, "Hey, we'd like to talk to you." And once again, I cannot stress this enough. Shut the fuck up and get an attorney. Do not make any statements. especially get an attorney who is familiar with white-collar crime. Because, remember, at this point, the idea of going to trial is way, 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 way down the line. At this point, you're just under investigation. And there's many things a good white-collar criminal defense attorney can do to navigate you through this. So, under the investigative phase. Now, at this point, several things can happen, and we're going to take the position that you've retained an attorney. The attorney may, of course, is going to interview with you, have an interview with you, and want to know everything about it. And I cannot stress this enough again. Be honest with your attorney. Tell him or her everything, absolutely everything. I cannot stress this enough. Why? Once again, to use a medical analogy, if you go to see a doctor and you're coughing and you're hacking and you just have lung problems and you're a smoker and you go to the doctor and the doctor asks you if you're a smoker and you say no, well, you're not helping your cause, because if you say you're not a smoker and yet you're having lung problems and the doctor does a CT scan or some other type of scan of your lungs and finds precancerous cells or even worse, cancer there, and you say you're not a smoker, well, the doctor has to take the position that, well, what else is causing this cancer? Whereas if you're straightforward and say, well, I'm a smoker, the doctor can at least begin to say, okay, stop it right now, stop the smoking, and let's work on it. Same is true for an attorney. If you go into an attorney and you do not tell the truth about what happened, and keep in mind, we're not, no matter how good of an attorney you can be, we're not mind readers. We don't know what you're saying is true or not. So if you're lying to your attorney, you're hamstringing him from actually doing something about what's going on. And that can be very serious, because we have to take the position that our client is being straightforward with us. And if the client is not being straightforward with us, well, that hamstrings our ability to defend the client. So please be honest with your attorney. If you're part of this conspiracy, talk about it. If you know you did something wrong, talk about it. We need to have all this information before us. Otherwise, we cannot effectively represent you. It's just as simple as that. So at this point, you retain an attorney. And once again, you're being honest with that attorney, right? Good. You're being honest with that attorney, and you're telling him or her everything that's going on. At this point, the attorney is now going to act as a buffer between you and the government, or if it's a private authority that's investigating you, between you and that private authority. And that means that the attorney is going to be talking to the investigators and finding out more about what's going on. Now, in terms of the, I can relate from my own experiences in terms of white-collar criminal offense. If the government is the one doing the prosecution, the federal government, I found that the federal government is very, very good and direct about telling you, laying their cards on the table and saying, look, we believe this person did X. We believe your client is involved, for example, in the embezzlement of $10 million from this company. He's part of a criminal scheme. And a lot of times the government may not present all the evidence at that point in time, but they will certainly present some of the evidence. So because your attorney is acting as a buffer between you and the government, now your attorney will come back to you with the evidence and say, explain this. And at this point, the attorney will also begin to formulate a plan to say, okay, this is the exposure you have. Now, if you're innocent, if you truly did not know you were part of a conspiracy, or you truly believe you didn't commit any crime, then it's the job of the attorney to evaluate all the evidence and come back with, you know, a possibility. Now, it's not unusual for the attorney to go, if your client claims he's innocent, for the attorney to go back to the feds or to the police and say, look, my client had no part of this, and here's why. And of course, it's up to the police or the feds to determine whether or not if they're going to believe it. If they believe it and everybody's off the hook, great. But for the most part, and I have to be honest here, the feds have already been building up their case. And so they're probably going to say something to the effect of, we don't believe you, and here's why. So at this point, remember what I said earlier, using the medical analogy. At this point, your attorney is going to start to have to make plans as to how this, if this case goes forward, what is the next step? And keep in mind, there's something I need to relate here as well. It's up to the job of an attorney, especially in a white-collar criminal defense situation, and especially in the investigative phase, is to present, for the attorney to present enough evidence to the client where the client can make a rational decision as to what he wants to do. So, for example, if the client is saying, I'm innocent, I didn't do this, and the feds come back and show the evidence, it's the attorney's responsibility to say, look, here's what the feds have, and they probably have a lot more. Here is what would happen, you know, as this case develops, and if charges are brought against you, here's what you're looking at. Because, you know, at this point, the client needs to understand what is out there. And I've often found that many times the clients don't understand what the feds know. And simply getting, once again, we're going back to the trope that TV is not always accurate. TV shows are not accurate many times. And so it's up to the attorney to say, look, here's what you're facing. Here's what will happen against you. And a good attorney will be able to relate that. And once again, it's the job of the attorney to present enough information to the client where the client can make a rational decision as to what he wants to do. At this point, it's completely up to the client. So in the investigative phase, the attorney is presenting the evidence from the government to the client and saying, look, here are the issues. And as we proceed with this, we're going to take the position that the client did indeed commit a crime or wasn't part of a conspiracy, even if he or she doesn't realize it, and is looking at the very real possibility of a criminal charge or charges. In the federal courts, the government can levy multiple charges against a person and is facing either possibility of a trial or jail, going to trial or taking a plea. So it's very important at this point to sit down with your attorney, and it's going to be a long-term process. That is to say, it may take 1 or 2 months, but at some point the client is going to have to make a determination as to what they want to do. Now, there is a situation where if the client decides they understand they've committed a crime or they're being accused of committing a crime, and there's a chance there's a very real probability the government will engage in prosecution. The client will have to decide at that point if they want to help the government or not, because certainly with the feds, 9 times out of 10, the feds want cooperation. And there's several ways in which this happened. One of the most common ways is the client, not the defendant yet. He or she is not charged with a crime, but the client will sit down with the government, with the attorney there, and with the feds. Many times the government will offer what's called a proffer. A proffer agreement is where the client of the attorney will sit down with the government and make statements, and anything the client says during this time cannot be used against him. So if the client says, for example, on this day I killed Billy Bob, the government can't then say, aha, you killed Billy Bob, we're going to use that against you. They can't do that. However, although a proffer is nice, there's several things that a person needs to realize. First of all, it's not foolproof. If the person is giving evidence as to very serious crimes, at some point, of course, the government will be bringing charges against them. And the government may say, well, we're not charging this person based on what you told us. We're basing the charge on what this other person told us. So that is a very real possibility. But at this stage, if the client is cooperating, the government usually is very appreciative and will not go back on its word. Second, during a proffer, the client has to be completely honest with the government. And I can't stress this enough. The client has to be completely honest with the questions that are being asked. And the government, of course, the representatives of the federal government or the state government are not stupid. Part of the proffer process is they will be asking questions to the client that they already know the answer to. And if the client lies about that, then the government knows they're lying. And at that point, the government can say, well, you've broken the proffer, therefore anything you tell us, you've told us, can now be used against you. Or many times what will happen is the government representative will talk to the attorney and say, hey, your client is lying, and we know they're lying because of this, so get him to shape up. And at that point, as a criminal defense attorney, we have what's called a come to Jesus meeting with our clients and say, look, you wanted this, you're gonna have to come clean. So a proffer is a very, very effective way for the government to get the information it needs, and for the client, it's a good way to cooperate with the government, and this will help a lot in sentencing later, and we'll talk about that in terms of the podcast as we go on. So, a proffer is one of the ways in which at this point during the investigative phase, the client can get himself some goodwill from the government. Now, this does not mean, of course, the charges will not be brought against him. However, what it does mean is that the charges that will be brought against, for example, the federal government can bring 10 charges against the client, they may just end up bringing one because of the proffer. And also, during the sentencing, the person who does the proffer has a very good chance of getting a much lower sentence, and we'll talk about that later as well. So, the proffer, a very valuable tool for your client, for a white-collar client, to get ahead of the game. Sometimes what the government will offer as well, especially the feds, is what's called a reverse proffer. Sometimes it's hard for a client to understand just exactly what's out there against them, and many times the clients are convinced of their innocence. And keep in mind, I want to make this clear, and this is especially true for my foreign listeners. In America, you are innocent until proven guilty, unless and until a person goes to trial and loses, or stands before a judge and admits their guilt, they are innocent. So a good example I always give is a traffic ticket. Here in the state of Texas, believe it or not, speeding tickets are crimes. And you can actually get a trial by jury. It always blows the mind of some of my fellow attorneys in different states where they don't have that. And you can have a trial by jury. Well, the charging document the officer gives to the speeder is a speeding ticket. And unless the person pays the fine and admits their guilt or goes to trial and loses, they are not guilty of speeding. So it's just like a traffic ticket. Just because you're accused of a crime does not mean you're guilty. The only way that you're guilty is if you go to trial and lose or you stand in front of a judge and plead your guilt. So we were talking about a reverse proffer. A reverse proffer is where the government will sit down with the client and tell them everything that's, or show them, if not everything, then certainly much of the evidence that's against them. And this is a good opportunity for the client to understand just what really is out there. And it's also a good opportunity for the criminal defense attorney to get some discovery, although in our criminal justice system, all documents have to be turned over to the criminal defense attorney, but it's a good way for the criminal defense attorney to get a jump on what's actually out there against the client. And that's very, very, very important. And this way the client understands just the evidence against them. And so certainly I've been in reverse proffers before with my clients and I've been able to tell them, look, here's what the government is saying is against you. So you have to ask yourself, what is out there and will a jury accept that this is all false? So under the investigative phase at this point, if the client chooses to cooperate, well, there are many ways in which the client can either learn about what's out there, such as the reverse proffer, or decide to help the government, such as a proffer situation, and get either a reduction in the sentence in the future if the client will be pleading guilty, and also having less charges pleading that the client will have to plead to. So at this point, under the investigative phase, we've discussed what happens if the client decides to cooperate. Next time, we'll be discussing during the investigative phase what happens if the client maintains his innocence and wishes to go forward. So once again, I want to thank everyone for tuning into my White Collar Crime and Fraud podcast. As always, I'm your host, Gene Tausk, and I will try to get out my second episode for the month of April, where, as I said, we're going to discuss what happens during the investigative phase when a client maintains their innocence. Thank you very much. Hope you're having a great weekend.